ahead.
Hello, everyone. On today's IRTP Part B Working Group meeting, on today's call, we have Mikey O'Connor, Kevin Erdman, Michaela Nylon, James Bladel, Neil George, Paul Diaz, Michael Collins, Barry Cobb, and for staff, we have David Giza and myself, Marika Koning. We have apologies from Barbara Steele, Bob Mountain, and Matt Serling.
Okay, thank you. So how is everybody today? Hopefully in good fighting form. And thank you to all of you who have been making contributions using the mailing list. It's helpful. Because if we don't use the mailing list, we'll never get anywhere as far as I can see. Right then. We have received several bits and backwards and forwards from several people regarding the transfer office, the transfer reverse policy that we've been working on. Do people want to go through those now? Actually, Marika's brought it up on screen. So Marika's brought up a... Marika, which changes does this incorporate?
This incorporates the changes that Michael proposed as well as Kevin. So this is the latest. I think Kevin used Michael's draft to add his changes, so this is the version that's up there. There are also some discussions and questions, I think, on the mailing list between Michael and Paul, but I don't think those are incorporated here yet.
Okay. So do we want to have a look at... So, trying to incorporate those changes, or do we want to discuss that backwards and forwards a little bit? Michael, you on the call?
Yes, but muted. Sorry. Yes, I think that I answered Paul as best I could. I did. I think Paul might be better able to suggest any changes based on his questions better than I would be.
Okay, Paul. Are you on the call? Oh, he's not. He is on the call.
Yeah, I'm here, Michaela.
Sorry, I see all these emails backwards and forwards from people saying that they're making calls and not making calls, and I get confused which call they're referring to.
Yeah, Later on, I miss. Leaving you to your own devices for Pedner.
Thanks.
Look, my questions here are... let me be clear up front and for the recording. This is Paul. I'm very much in support of this concept, and I was just trying to think through... So my questions are not a challenge. I'm not trying to tear anything down. I just needed to kind of think through everything because, as I said on the list, I just noted a couple things I thought were perhaps a little different. So as we jump out to the rework section 5, Michael's suggestions, I was just raising some questions. 5.2, we're now offering, or the suggestion is that ETR... RP must be contested by the new registrar within 14 days completion of an ETRP. My question on the list was, why do we pick 14 days? Was there some logic behind it? I mean, to me, 14 days was almost a quarter of the 60-day lock period. To put it in perspective, you're giving up an awful lot of the time that, we're trying to... if we're protecting rights of registrants, did we want it to be quicker? Did we want it to be longer? It was just a question, why 14?
Michael?
I think you're on mute, Mike.
Okay, let's start over. First, I'd say, Paul, thank you. I didn't take your comments as anything except for helpful. I picked 14 days sort of out of the blue, I suppose, just because I thought that that just like the EPRP itself, the registrant, though it would be filed by the registrant really must initiate it. So there must be communication, there must be notification to the registrant, and then the registrant needs some time to study the issue and then to respond to the registrar, and then the registrar needs time to file it. So I was just trying to figure out, you know, some amount of time to allow for all that. I will note that the PTRR has 60 days to file the initial ETRP. So by that, 14 seems fairly short. That's all.
Great. Sounds good to me. I mean, does anybody else have any thoughts? Is 14 a good number? People comfortable with it?
This is Kevin. In my mind, that is a fairly short time span, depending on when the registrant actually gets that notice. You know, like you were saying, is that there has to be that level of communication, and I don't know if there needs to be a prescription in other parts of the ETRP that the registrar has to communicate to the registrant, or we just leave that as one of those market force things that the better communicators are going to get, you know, more registrants.
Anybody else want to weigh in? James?
Hi, Billy. Thank you. This is James speaking. So I just had a question, and I apologize. I haven't really fully baked this idea. I'm just kind of going through my head here that, you know, that the registrant is listed here as the person who is authorized to have the new registrar dispute the ETRP. But in consistency with the earlier parts of the document, the registrant is also the individual or entity that requested the ETRP in the first place, so that we have the same individual making conflicting requests at two different registrars. Or, alternatively, they are not the same individual or entity. There are two separate individuals. And my concern here is that now we're describing a domain dispute, which is separate than disputing just a transfer, but is actually, you know, disputing ownership or control of the name. And I'm just a little concerned that we may be being ambitious by trying to resolve all the possible dispute scenarios with this process. And again, I'm trying to be as constructive as possible, but I think that, you know, we need to differentiate whether or not the registrant, particularly the one listed in Section 5.3, is the same registrant that initiated the PTR in Section, I believe, in Section 3.4.1. And if they are the same, you know, kind of how do we address the conflicting instructions? And if they're not the same, you know, then I think we may have a bigger problem.
Okay, there's a queue building up here. So we have Michael Collins and then Mikey O'Connor.
Well, while it might not have been named as such, I think that we've all considered the ETRP to be a process to return a hijacked domain name. And I think that if you're making a claim of hijacking, you can assume that there's two different registrants. That's all.
Thank you. Mikey?
This is Mikey. Thanks. What if we just made clear whether it's the gaining registrant or the losing registrant in appropriate spots in the document as a way to clarify which person is doing what? Would that be a way out of this?
Michael, would you be able to respond to that, you think?
I bet he's on mute again. Are you muted, Michael?
I thought I left it off this time. No, I just tried to copy as many of the terms as I could from Section 3. I don't have any problem with that.
Okay. James?
Yeah, I think my recommendation was along the same lines, where we would distinguish the individual or entity in Section 5 as different from the individual or entity in Section 3.4, and essentially say that they're disputing the claim of a hijack, and they want the transfer to stand. And maybe if we can identify, as Mikey said, we have a gaining and losing registrant, that might get us there.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, I wanted to add that the TDRP under Section 314D accommodates, apparently, a dispute of control, because it says, 3.4 says, request for enforcement shall, it says copy of a bilateral agreement, final determination of a dispute resolution body or court in order, in cases where the registrant of record is being changed simultaneously with a registrar transfer. So apparently that is something they're prepared to accommodate in a TDRP. That's all.
Okay, thank you. Paul?
Thanks, McKaylee. Michael, that's an interesting site, and honestly, I'd have to go back, but I would just note for the group that, at least in the network solution family of registrars' experience, the TDRP, the whole reason we're working on this new ETRP is that the existing tools at our disposal don't work quickly, and honestly, I can't think of an example where, in the case of alleged hijacking, we've been able to successfully have TDRP resolve the case for us. The registries basically throw up their hands and say, "No, we're not going to adjudicate this."
I don't have that experience. I mean, I don't have the experience to help you with that. I don't know what to say about that.
I think that's why it's great that we're working on it here.
I think if the TDRP doesn't work, then my suggestion may be faulty. But I think there needs to be some means for having the dispute heard. I don't think that we can create a reversal that just doesn't have a dispute mechanism. That's all.
I'm going to put myself in the queue very quickly. Barbara, unfortunately, isn't on the call this afternoon, as some of you may be aware. So maybe it might be worth addressing this with her. The other thing is, while it's fine for us to discuss some of this, maybe we might get some better options from the community when we put this out to public comment. Just a thought. Mikey?
Thanks, McKaylee. It's Mikey. I just wanted to chime in behind Michael and support the notion that, we can't have a situation where it's basically a one-way process, because that leaves a pretty gaping avenue for abuse by people who are using this, not in the case of hijacking, but as a way to stymie another kind of transaction.
Okay, thank you. James?
I'll go after you, McKaylee. Go ahead.
No, I already went.
Okay. I agree. I think that, we need some checks and balances here. Let's avoid the temptation to have it just a reverse of a reverse of a reverse. But I would say that, one possible component we could include here is an additional reporting obligation, so that if anyone abuses this component of the proposed process, that it's out there in the open and, sunlight being the best disinfectant and all of that.
Okay. I'm just going to put myself back in the queue very, very quickly. I think we need to try and strike some kind of balance where there are checks and balances. but obviously, I mean, the reason why we're even contemplating this policy is because, as has already been discussed to death, the current system doesn't allow the level of flexibility to actually deal with situations that registrars and registrants are dealing with. So just going back to the email from Paul Diaz regarding Michael Collins's suggestions, could we just clarify a couple of the other questions that were raised there, if you don't mind, gentlemen? So I'm putting the two
sure,
back
Taylor. No, that's good. I was going to jump back in the queue to get back to it. My second question, Michael, was about 5.4.1, and I simply asked if we were using registrant, putting quotations, in the general sense of the term, or as we typically see it defined by ICANN, i.e. the registered name holder. I think the discussion we previously had, if we have some more clarifying language in here now, will avoid the possibility that I'd raised that are we wading into the admin contact versus registrant. We just need to be careful, I think, anytime we use a term like registrant, do we mean it with effectively a capital R defined, you know, very specific context, or do we mean it more in the general you know, sense of the term, somebody who has registration rights to a domain name? And if I can just paraphrase what, you know, the exchange on the list, Michael was noting, hey, good point. He was just copying language from what we already had in Section 3. So I think what we've described already, if we just clarify it here, you know, we'll avoid that concern.
Agreed.
All right. Jumping ahead to Section 5.9, you know, we were paraphrasing the TDRP, noting that, you know, a complainant is allowed up to 6 months to file their petition. And then Michael had said, you know, it's not reasonable for the name to remain with the pre-transfer registrar for the entire period when a domain's in dispute. All right. And, okay, a little quibble about using a term like reasonable. The lawyers can have a field day with something like that. You know, what I was questioning was if the working group accepts what Michael's offering there in 5.9, does that mean that we need to go back and make tweaks to the TDRP? And then, again, paraphrasing Michael, he says he's not proposing changes to TDRP per se. He's, you know, pushing the idea that the domain name shouldn't remain locked for the entire six-month period. If that pre-transfer registrar wants to file the TDRP, they should do so during the suggested 60-day ETRP lock, the one that we're suggesting here in our proposed policy now, the new policy. It goes on to say, otherwise the domain name will be transferred to the new registrar while the TDRP is heard that it's today without the existence of this brand new ETRP. So I guess to paraphrase in sum then, we're not looking for a change to the existing transfer dispute resolution policy. Just want to make it clear that the names don't necessarily have to be frozen for the full period, that the policies can move forward as appropriate. Is that a fair characterization, Michael?
Yeah, I would add that the last sentence I wrote in 5.9 could just be deleted. I think it was more of a note for this group than it was intended as part of the policy anyway.
Great. Why don't we do that? Just drop it. Avoid any confusion.
Just one thing before proceed. Just to make sure that we're all on the same playing field. Sorry, I must be careful with my metaphors. I think somebody could have a linguistic heyday with metaphors on ICANN conference calls. It would be helpful if you guys were to just kind of follow through on this on the list so that we have in black and white exactly what we're talking about. It also gives other people who can't make it onto the call or who maybe don't feel like giving input now a chance to put that, throw their hat into the whatever the thing is that you throw hats into. No, please proceed.
That would be ring.
Ring, thank you.
All right, then. Let's see, in 5.10, and James, perhaps you can help me. I may have this backwards, but my understanding for the existing transfer dispute resolution policy, TDRP, the registry operator is going to determine the outcome, right? They're effectively the adjudicating body. And so my question on the list was, if this is correct, then that entity, the registry operator, they're going to know the outcome of the proceeding, and they can unlock the contested name as appropriate. So my question was, do we really need any of that text after the first sentence in 5.10? You know, are we basically just telling them what they already know, how to do their job? And Michael's response was, maybe he's really not sure. You know, the intent is there, but whatever it takes to make it clearer to the public. So I guess there's a general question from both of us now to the group. Their understanding of how TDRP works, do we need the extra verbiage after the first sentence? Or is that already basically codified in the existing TDRP? Please jump in, Michael.
I really didn't maybe understand your question, and in any case, it appears that the person filing a TDRP has a choice to file it with the registry or a dispute resolution provider. So it may or may not be the registry. I would imagine in practice it's usually the registry because of the fees associated with this using a dispute resolution provider. But it is an option.
Just one thing, though, Michael, if you're filing it with a resolution provider, it's not a TDRP.
According to number four, it is. Item four. A filing registrar may elect to skip the first level dispute process at registry level and submit a request for enforcement directly with a dispute resolution provider. 4.1.
Okay.
I'm going to assume because of the fees it rarely happens, but that's there it is.
I'll take that one on, and specifically going back to the list, Michele, and asking Barbara in particular for input. I agree with Michael. I don't think we've ever looked to a dispute resolution provider, simply because I don't believe dispute resolution provider's decision is going to be binding upon the registry operator in this case. So we always go straight to a registry in the policy. That's kind of news.
According
to me.
To the policy, it is.
It would be? Okay.
According to the policy, I don't know about practice.
Yeah, and that's very important and not necessarily one and the same.
Okay, so we'll deal with that one via Barbara on the list then.
Look for clarification on the list, yeah. Because again, I mean, the only point for myself was, do we need the extra stuff after the very first sentence?
Okay.
Kind of straightforward. And then finally, at least from our initial exchange, in 5.11, I was asking why he's recommending a 30-day time frame. Getting back to the idea of if we're looking out for the best interests of the registrant whose name's been hijacked, you know, would a shorter time frame be more appropriate? And Michael expressed flexibility on the idea. We're just looking for making this the best policy procedure we have. So it's a kind of question for the group in 5.11. Is 30 days an appropriate number? Should we shoot for something shorter? I don't know. What does the group think?
Even though I haven't been called on, Paul, I'll go ahead and say I would note that the 30 days includes the 14 days that you had questioned earlier. So that might play a role. And if we shorten the 14-day period, then it would also make sense to shorten the 30-day period, I think.
Okay, and in fairness, what I heard earlier is that maybe 14 potentially could not be long enough. And again, I'm open to all this. I'm looking to create sensible policy here. No preconceptions. So I thought I had heard earlier that, you know, perhaps the back and forth investigation, et cetera, 14 may not be enough, in which case 30 may not be enough. What do people think? Mikey?
Well, Mikey and Kevin in the queue there. As Paul's thrown that question open, does anybody want to address that question, or shall I go to the queue?
This is Mikey. I'm in the queue for that question.
Go ahead.
I don't have strong opinions. My immediate reaction on how to figure this out would be to see if there's some comparable interval in some other context, so that when people say, how come you picked that number, we could say, well, because it's like this other thing that's pretty similar, so that there's a kind of consistency. That's my immediate thought. I don't know what that would be, but that's the way I'd tackle the problem.
Okay. Do you have anything else to add on this topic, Mikey?
No, that's it.
Okay. Kevin?
Yeah. This is Kevin. I did want to address that. I did raise the concern that 14 days might not be enough. I think it's also important to consider that this dispute resolution portion means that the alleged hijacker has brought the TDRP. So I don't think we have quite the same rush to justice that we do on the returning everything to the position before the transfer started. So in my mind, I think it's more important to provide adequate amount of time, and so I would err on the side of having a longer rather than shorter period. And I think Mikey's suggestion that we find, analogous situations and make our, length of time for resolving that issue similarly situated situations makes a lot of sense. I'm not quite sure exactly what would be the best analog in existing policies, but I think that's a good road to go down. So that's my thoughts on it.
Okay, thank you. Michael Collins and then Mikey.
I wanted to correct my previous statement. I reread my own writing, and it does the 30 days that we are currently talking about does not include the 14 days. I may have thought it did when I wrote it, so I just wanted to retract that. That's all.
Okay, thank you. Mikey?
This is Mikey. Just one clarification to Kevin's point, which with this one caveat I agree with. I think that the situation we're dealing with here is where the receiving registrant is not a hijacker. When they're a hijacker, my presumption would be that they would not contest it, and that what we're doing is providing an avenue for a person who is, in fact, at least arguably, the legitimate new receiving registrant. So I do like the idea of giving them a little bit more time, because presumably this is a person who's innocent of wrongdoing in the most cases. We shouldn't slam the door so quick that they can't get their foot in it. That's the only point I wanted to make there.
Sorry, Mike, could you just clarify, who do you want to protect or help here?
Well, my presumption in Michael's, and I'm putting words in Michael's mouth, so if I get this wrong, Michael, feel free to chime in. But my presumption is that this is the appeal that a person who's being abused by, the example that came up on the list was the seller of a domain name who has second thoughts. And they decide that they really didn't want to sell the name for whatever reason. They get a better offer or they just got cold feet. And they invoke this to unwind a legitimate transaction by which they ought to be bound. And that this window is for the person who actually should get the domain to challenge their action. Because, my presumption is if it's a bad actor, they're just going to go away.
What do you do when you have, if you look at the sex.com case, for example, where you have somebody who, you know, I'm trying to think of the polite way of saying it, has a lot of neck.
I've never heard that phrase before, sorry.
Well, the only other options I had weren't really suitable to a recorded phone call, so... I'm sure you could think of a few ways of putting that.
Yeah, God. I guess the main point that I wanted to make was that, this is one of those situations that could get quite complicated. Sex.com is a great example of complicated. And we wouldn't want the process to be... used maliciously by somebody who knew that there was a short window of response and sort of gamed that short window. I may have dug into a complex hole that we don't need to dig ourselves into, but that's kind of a long-winded way of saying I think I support a bit longer interval than 14 days.
Paul?
Yeah, thanks, Michele. Actually, open question for our ICANN staff colleagues, Marika, David, or Olaf. Can you guys think of any analogy that we're struggling with in terms of time frames? Any policies or anything that might serve as a precedent for us in setting these time frames? Please, Marika, just jump in, anybody.
Marika has her hand up. Stop bullying
Marika. I'm actually not aware of any other policies. I'll leave it to David or to Olaf to see if they have any suggestions. But an idea would be, and I think Michael already suggested that before as well, I mean, this is an area where the group, for example, could put in a number of options, I think 14 days, 30 days, or clearly identify that this is an area where it would like to receive input on what would be an appropriate timing. And highlighting it that way in the initial report might, you know, get some input from the community and you know, help the discussion following a public comment period in the second phase of the PDP.
Yeah, and Michele, if I can just to follow up, I'm in total agreement with that. I mean, for now, I think for our initial report, 2 weeks and a month, you know, that's the way it'll boil down. It's a good start. It's a good placeholder, and let the community weigh in with differences of opinion if they have any.
Yeah, this is Dave Giza. I would support that because I'm like Marika. I'm not aware of any particular time periods or constraints here that would add any more value than what we've already discussed.
Olaf,
well. Just to add that, there are plenty of time limits, and in general, I would say that I can't recall us using anything else than calendar days, if that's of any guidance here. But I fully support what Marika proposed as well to have a number of alternatives.
Okay. Okay then, right, let's move on from this. What I would strongly recommend then is that we set a deadline on the draft that we're currently discussing. Rather, otherwise this could go on forever. Marika, what would you suggest as a time?
This is Marika. So the deadline for publication of the report will be the 31st of May, which is a Monday. So, you know, I think reasonably if the group wants to have some time to review the edits and comments received, you know, hoping we can have as well discussion on the list.
This is comments from us, by the way, obviously, not from the public.
Yes. So it's added to the initial report. I think maybe if we could say Wednesday 19th, would that be reasonable for everyone, or Thursday 20th? That would allow me some time to incorporate the comments and edits, and then we can have a, you know, almost final version, hopefully for review on the call on the 25th of May. Would that work?
Works for me. Does anybody have any strong opposition? Hold on a second. Michael Collins has his hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, and maybe this, I hope I'm not stepping on your toes, McKelly, but I just wanted to ask if we could get a volunteer to review the one issue that Paul brought up, which was defining registrant, and possibly, as Mikey might have said, I think, you know, the two registrars that are involved in this a little better. One is PTRR, and the other is new registrar. And, again, I copied everything that I used from Section 3 because I didn't want to create new definitions, you know, towards the end of this document. But I think that that's probably the one thing that we need to do before we go forward.
So you're saying we need to have a clear definition of registrant, is it?
I'm according to Paul, and I don't disagree. I'm maybe just not the best. I don't have the best knowledge or experience in that. But I think that we should be careful to try and hone down the definitions. And I think the two that I see that are possibly problematic is which registrar, you know, naming defining the two registrars and the two registrants. That's all.
Okay. Would anybody like to volunteer to do this? Would somebody like to volunteer to do this before I volunteer them?
McKelly, it's Paul. I was just writing on the list. I do think this is one where you don't want one volunteer. We need a subgroup approach again. It could be two or ideally three, just so you don't get group thinking.
That's fair enough.
And I'm willing to be part of that subgroup. You know, I mean, I think it worked very well the first go around.
Okay, so, Paul, do I have any other volunteers?
This is Mikey. I'll join in with the proviso that I'm kind of stressed out, but I'll do my best.
Okay, so Paul plus one stressed out Mikey. And a third... Just for the record, I'm not volunteering myself because I'm stretched thin as it is.
Chris here, I'll go for that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so guys, if you want to just kind of thrash out the details, you've got each other's contact details, you thrash out your details and then report back afterwards. Paul and Mikey have both done this exercise recently, so they know where they're at. Does anybody have any issue with what Marika was suggesting in terms of the 19th or the 20th?
Yeah, so the 19th and 20th. If I can just add something, Michaela, because what is still needed then is an updated version of the ETRP, and I don't know if Michael is willing to make, you know, based on the discussion now, any changes to this version so that can be incorporated in the report. As you can see, I've already included kind of an executive summary in the draft of the body, and the idea would be to incorporate then the complete text in the annex. But I think the executive summary would then allow as well to call out some of those issues where, you know, specific input is required, and it would still need as well the, you know, to abstract the elements that have been added by Kevin and Michael in this version. So it would be helpful to have an updated version maybe going out to the list following today's discussion. So, you know, we can have a few days more discussion before I actually incorporate that into the report. Another issue is a recommendation for issue D, and I think that's on Michaela's to-do list. That one is still missing, so it would be really helpful as well to get that out to the list so we can have some, you know, if people have input or feedback on it before incorporating that into the document together with the other recommendations that are there now.
This is Michaela, just responding to part of that.
as I said to Marika earlier, I'm very, very badly behaved and I haven't been doing my homework, and Marika has my full permission to nag me about what I said I would do, which I haven't done, and I hope she will take me up on that. Michael Collins, I see a hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the only change that I remember suggesting was deleting the last sentence of 5.9 that had the word reasonable in it. And I'll be happy to do that and redistribute this.
Okay, perfect.
This is Marika. Just one question. So for the timing, what does the group want to do there? Do we want to include some ranges or just highlight in the executive summary that, you know, we've included some timings, but those are areas that we're specifically looking input on. Would that be a reasonable approach?
Marika, my view personally would be that if we've included time ranges, but we are open to input, further input. If somebody has any strong feelings. I mean, I don't know if that's viable or not. Does anybody else have any thoughts on that?
This is Mikey. The only thought I would have is that it's easier for us old geezers if the ranges are in the paragraph rather than far, far away, because we don't have much in the way of memory left.
Would you like me to get out a little violin for you?
No. I'd forget the tune.
I'll behave. Okay, then.
Michele?
Yes.
It's Paul. I was just going to actually take a different tact here. I would leave the numbers we have in the report and then highlight or have a call out that says, you know, we're open to something else. I think if we start giving the community, number one, we don't know what sort of level of feedback we'll get. Based on the IRTPA, it was good but not great. We may not get much response to ranges. Given how extensively we discussed it here, we have thought it through. You know, we have come up with the time frames that we're offering and can defend them a bit. I think if we start offering examples, what if we get, you know, three people, they all take different ones, what does that tell us? I just assume keep it simple, put it here, make it clear we're always open if people have a strong feeling another way, but kind of let's get through with this. Let's get it done.
This is Mikey. I'm on board with that.
Okay. That sounds good to me. Michael Collins, you still have a hand up?
Oh, well, I accidentally still have a hand up, but I did come up with a new question. We haven't talked about Kevin's additions to this document at all, I don't think.
Okay.
That's all. Just pointing that out.
Now, just Marika had a hand up. Is hand gone, Marika?
Yeah, that actually relates to one of the other issues. So if people still want to discuss this and Kevin's suggestions, you probably should do that first, and then I'll make my point on one of the other parts of the report.
Okay. Kevin, did you want to say anything about your additions?
Sure. Just that I think the easy part of the additions are just allowing for an alternative 60-day period on the registrants becoming aware of the transfer, and just having an additional requirement in the materials that have to be submitted is that, you know, if you're outside of the 60-day transfer lock, then the registrant has to provide an explanation of, you know, when and how they became aware of the transfer, because we don't want to have this be a replacement for the TDRP in all cases, so we, you know, want to have that provision, and, you know, I'm certainly not wed to any of these particular words, but that was sort of the theory behind that. And then probably the more controversial thing, which is the idea of having some sort of a token that is uniquely provided to the registrant, so that the registrant
rather than the administrative contact, must be involved in a ETRP in order to get things going. This would have a farther ranging impact because it would put a new obligation on a registry in distributing this sort of token. I think a lot of registries already provide something that's analogous to a token, and so it may not be as much of a burden as I think. But I'm just interested on the group's thoughts and comments about that. Thanks.
Does anybody have any questions or queries or anything related to this? Well, I'll put myself in. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay. Kevin, just help me understand when in your proposal you're making it clear using the word token as in a more general sense, and that you want to give the registrars some leeway, some flexibility. The concern I had is that, and maybe it's just definitional, that when we use something like token, I think of the existing security-related products that are out there, and not to pick on Barbara, but VeriSign's already in this space. They have a value-added service available, and I do have a bit of a concern that if we may be creating a situation here where the concept's good, but what will happen in implementation is there will be a push by certain large market players to get the market to move to their product, their service. And I mean, I think it's pretty clear from your note that that's not necessarily the intention, but I'm a little concerned about it, so I'm not really, I'm left not very sure this whole concept of a token, if it's potentially going to lead to some unintended consequences in terms of how it will play out in the actual marketplace.
Michael Collins, you have your hand up?
Yes. I was reading through what Kevin wrote, and I may have forgot my question. I can move back in the list.
Okay. Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair comment. I don't know if it's just the use of the word token that creates that, or if some other language, registrant identifier, I don't know what would be the best way to try to avoid creating an unintended consequence like that. But I think that is a fair comment on the token aspect. Thanks.
Paul, I presume that's from earlier, is it, or do you want to go again?
Sorry, that was earlier.
Okay. Mikey and then Michael Collins.
This is Mikey. I think that token is just the word that's causing the problem, because it does evoke a pretty technical term for a lot of folks. So, Kevin, I think you were on the right track when you were saying, let's change the words, because I don't really think this is actually a token. It's, as you say, a code or an identifier or something a little less strictly defined, and that might be a way to sidestep that market issue. I agree that we don't want that particular unintended consequence, and I think that it's really just bound up in the word.
Okay, does anybody else have any? Michael, I see you there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think I remembered. I may be showing my ignorance here, but how would a token differ from what we already have, which is, I think, called an FOA or form of authorization to anyone?
Kevin?
Well, as I understand it, the form of authorization is submitted by the administrative contact as part of the registration process, where what I'm contemplating is the when the process is going through, that the registrar or the registry would send something specifically to the registrant that would it would be the equivalent of, you bought the car, we're sending you the original car keys, even though the administrative contact may be out there driving the car around who knows where.
My question on that, and we're talking about, at least in the .com, a thin registry. The registry doesn't know who the registrant is. Just a question. I meant that as a question. How would you contemplate resolving that?
Who's the question to? Sorry?
To Kevin. Apologize.
This is Kevin, and I think that's a fair point. That what I would like to envision is a world where a sophisticated or concerned registrant, even though they may outsource their IT function to third parties, would then at least have the option of saying, "Oh, whenever you register a domain name for, us, registrant, you have to put this in the registrant information that includes the contact information that allows the registrant to get that thing that we was formerly known as token, that would be their unique identifier as the owner of that domain, rather than the case where the administrative contact that initially submits the gets the domain and submits all the stuff, they certainly could set themselves up as the registrant as well, in which case the actual beneficial owner might not have any standing anyway. But that's a problem of contract law, and what I'm trying to do is to say, well, if you want to be a sophisticated registrant, you can make sure that all your transactions are initially handed correctly, so that you have the you have all the master keys in your closet rather than the administrative contact.
Okay, guys, it's the top of the hour. I think this thing with the entire token concept is something that we need to discuss further on the list. So I would ask those who have feelings in favor of it, those who have feelings against it, those who view issues with it, potential issues, and any other opinions on it, to try and put those ideas to the list. You could, that would be helpful. Marika, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, this is Marika. That was just on 2E. I'll update there because I think actually it was a rough consensus for the 5 calendar day option. So do people agree to leave that in? And again, I think there, we're looking at an initial report, so if they're comments or suggestions, otherwise the group can still reconsider that. There was also, I think Michael Collins made that proposal as well, Mike Rodenbach raised it, whether there could be some examples of readily accessible and reasonable. I don't know if anyone has any suggestions there, or again, that's something that the group would like to highlight in its report and encourage comments on. And there was one wording change suggested to facilitate removing or remove. But again, I think there are people, when they review the report, I'll update the latest version and push that out. And I think people can comment on it then in that way.
Okay, thank you. Okay, then. Does anybody have any other issues they wish to raise? No? Okay, then do you mind if we close this call down? And we'll speak again next week.
Thanks, McKeely. I'm going to take my little violin and go home.
if you want, Mikey, well, how about this? You can get yourself a nice cup of coffee with your Black Knight mug, since I heard you got it. So.
I did, and it's so big that I have to heat the coffee extra hot in order to survive. Otherwise, it just cools right off when I put it in there.
Well, this is. You have to recalibrate the coffee machine. At least that's what we have to do with ours.
Yeah.
I have one person who uses it for his breakfast. I think he has his entire breakfast out of the bloody mug. I think large bowl might be a better description.
Yeah.
Okay, lady and gentlemen, I'll speak to you all next week.
Bye bye.
Thanks, McKelly.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye.